about a year after, quote unquote, 9/11/01, I told Amy, we haven't done the first thinking about what to do with hijacked passengers. Shooting them down is the last thing we would do. But the left supposedly thinks, well, they didn't act because the interceptors were supposed to shoot them down. Dum, 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 dum. Of course, we just shot down the Iranian airliner. And so that is in the mind of the world, the payback. And all that is all mixed up in there, but they're going to talk about this in this, and I am going to stop the recording so you don't have to listen to it a zillion times. But so in the case of Casablanca, shocked that the ostensible resistance to the oil war would go past the U.S. Embassy waging the oil war to kill policemen at the Belgium Embassy. Now, of course, they immediately dropped the International Court of Justice charges against, or was it International Criminal Court charges against Bush, Cheney, and company for the criminal invasion on Iraq after this false, transparent cloak and dagger. And I was reminded of Casablanca, the embassy bombing of the Belgians, you know, on this bogus pretext that the news would barf up when there's a Santa Barbara co-worker going postal and shooting up the holiday party, and because they're Muslims, they're going to portray it in this war, phony war on our proxies, you know, staging this turf war or the oil. We're following the Russians in that little two-step. Remember, 99 apartment bombings blamed on the Chechens so they could reduce Grozny to rubble. That's Yeltsin's, and he's our man. I remember using the stolen World War II. Oh, so here we're talking about
orders not to interfere with the Japanese attack.
President Roosevelt told the General Marshall to send a message to the Hawaiian and Philippine commanders, don't interfere with Japan's overt act of war. The United States desires that they, Japan, commit the first overt act. There's no...
Yeah. So, there's no law against the Japanese doing military exercises all the way around the globe if they wanted, so... They're steaming past Hawaii. Oh, well, we know what might happen. So, you know, you're ready to guard and respond. But, of course, there are, Webster talks about the fascists in the military wanting Japan to take over, like, South America, which, of course, Fujimori did briefly, and then cut the throats of the Tupac Amaru people posing in the pictures was a bloody atrocity, but never mind.
No argument about what FDR meant. He meant that
something happening, yeah. Yeah, yeah. What it is ain't exactly clear.
Au contraire, it's all too clear. Anyway, this week's Guns and Butter was a zillion times, well, it's only been played twice in our playlist, from October 3rd, well, that's when Captain Fred puts it in. So, that was just a premium, and that doesn't have anything to do with this week's news, which is that we're dropping Russian bombs on Damascus, well, just outside Damascus, killing 3 Syrian government soldiers. Now, we could call this an act of piracy subject to laws against murder, conspiracy to murder, 1111 is murder, 1116 is conspiracy to murder, 1117 conspiracy to murder internationally protected persons. So if they're policemen, they're like civilian employees, or if they're soldiers, well, if you're at war, then okay, but are we in a war with Syria? If you ask, I don't know, not me, because I am not at war with Syria, so I'm calling whatever it is, Qatar operation has us dropping bombs, New Pearl Harbor. Maybe we'll get back to you about the interceptors and the shooting down of an airliner, which is like the last thing anyone would do. except the enemy. Well, if it was an inside job, then of course that's going to play in there. And the left, goodness, they see they didn't shoot down the airliner. They weren't protecting the Pentagon. So it's obviously a false flag. Well, you say, so the next time they can shoot down the airliner, if one of our phony Chinooks that we sent to be Contra throat cutters, like in Central America and South Asia, the Contra war was going on at the same time, and that's what shook me out of the woods. This is the Endless Bad News Horror Story. This is DJ Mouse, founding member of Bolsheviks Anonymous. We realize that only by appealing to a power higher than ourselves can we overcome our disability and be happy hippies. And happy hippies don't kill people, but...
Welcome to World Crisis Radio, Webster Duncan here in Washington, D.C. Now we want to get a good orientation on the situation in Syria and the rest of the Middle East. Let's just note so many things that you haven't been told by the corrupt U.S. media. The city of Homs, which was considered the cradle of the rebellion, has been liberated by the Syrian army, working together with Hezbollah, the Russian Air Force, perhaps some Iranians also. City of Ramadi, the great conquest of ISIS, Daesh, earlier this year. Cut off, encircled, under siege.
So that would be the context for whatever else is going on in the news. Of course, you know, we're waging this phony war on our proxies that aren't going to be around much longer, so we're going to use them to the max, as Uncle Scam invariably will, saying, okay, I think we're shutting down the LA school systems today because of this coworker going postal next door in Santa Barbara, and then it's immediately his hostage, basically, has this Facebook posting attributed to her. And then that is, of course, oh, this is why we have to bomb Syria some more. And we just dropped a Russian bomb killing Assad's soldiers. And, Qatari operation, but so that we could have called it, the Russians accidentally bombed the people they were trying to support. See how this thing has, blah, blah, blah. And then there's the shootdown of the jet, and Egypt is denying blah, 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 blah. But of course, the Israeli is right next border, and they've got the rockets within range, and so, of course, they are the patrones, or is they patrons of these Israeli secret intelligence services, also called ISIS, and in the Golan Heights, they're liberating it for Cheney's fracking. Okay, now on November 22nd, 1963, as our brains are landing on the back of the Lincoln for the Secret Service and the First Lady to recover, 50 years later, Big Brother spokesperson are telling us that the First Lady retrieved them. That's why she was back there, to hand them to the doctor of apartheid. But of course, obviously driving past the Patsy, and they're telling you Oswald, driving past the Patsy. Any 5-year-old knows that, you know, your brains go flying in the direction that the bullet carries them, not in the direction that it came from. But, and of course, JFK rubs our nose in that. The film, Oliver Stone, I did give him Joan Wilcox's story, and amazingly, he's still around, probably because he didn't talk a word about it in his secret history of the U.S. And of course, I did send that same Jim Wilcox story to Lawrence Teeter, Sirhan, the Patsy, and the other brothers of Thousand Nation, and who promptly Cheney had to kill him, too. Oh, yeah, so... On November 22nd, 1963, of course, LBG said, I guess I'm going to have to sell my goddamn Halliburton stock. Because Cheney, now, in the case of this shootdown, they're saying, well, NATO didn't use their AWACS to shoot down the Russian plane. Of course, there's interceptors so that the Turkey missiles won't penetrate, but an AWACS will counter those measures. Now, there's the Saudi AWACS, and so they're saying, okay, they used the Saudi AWACS for that shootdown. But now, as far as killing the Syrian direct assault on Damascus, you know, 10,000-year-old city by these upstart pirates up the Potomac, who's been running this slavery scam for the last 5 centuries. Distrito de Colón, sabes, Minions del Colón, is, in English, C-O-L-O-N, is Bolsa de Caga. Disculpame.
And might have to surrender fairly soon, and progress of the Syrian Arab army towards Aleppo, also in terms of seizing this key highway that goes down then to Damascus. But let's get our expert to make sense of all of this, and that is Thierry Maison speaking to us from Damascus. So Thierry, lots of things changing militarily, and I know you want to look at it from the point of view of Turkey, Qatar, and Russia, so please do go ahead.
Yes, first, the Turkish government is always preparing the third Syrian war to create a new Kurdistan, but a Kurdistan without Kurds, in the north of Syria with the help of the Peshmerga, I mean the army of the Iraqi Kurds. And to do that, the government of Turkey deploy 1,000 of soldiers in Iraq to train the Peshmerga, the Iraqi Kurds, and they give them a lot of tanks and a lot of weapons. Of course, this was discovered by the Iraqi government, who asked to the Turkish to withdraw from their territory, and Ahmet Davutoglu, which is now the Prime Minister of Turkey, answer with a lot of arrogance, saying that they enter in Iraq with the authorization of the government of Baghdad, and they don't want to go out because they are helping their friends from the Kurdish government inside in the district of Iraq. And
outrageous.
Baghdad decide, yes, Baghdad decide to inform the Security Council of the United Nations, and we will see what will happen now. At the same time, the Qatar government tried to organize a false flag operation to accuse Russia to destroy some equipment from the Syrian army. So that's why the Defense Ministry of Qatar buy some Russian bombs in Ukraine this 2 months ago, but he need time to transfer these weapons in Syria. They use planes from the coalition, probably Qatari planes, but it's not sure. But some planes from the coalition, and they bomb a Syrian army building in near Deir ez-Zor at the north of Syria. They kill 3 Syrian soldiers and they wounded 24. And of course, they use this Russian bomb so they can say that they are not implied. They said it was an error from the Russian army and not an attack from the coalition. Unfortunately for them, the Russian government discovered the traffic between Ukraine and Qatar, and they published some documents to testify this traffic, and so the Qatar false flag operation was discovered.
Right.
But, yes, sorry.
No, that's the whole operation is now exposed as a fraud in the eyes of the world. Very embarrassing.
Yes. Yes, yes, but you know, it's very embarrassing, but nobody is embarrassed, in fact, because Qatar is always supported by the United States, so that's a very strange situation. Everybody knows that Qatar organized this false flag operation, but there is no reaction at all at the United Nations right now. So, what is important now is that the Russian army is preparing a very big operation inside Syria. They need some time to do that, but first they open a second military base in Syria, and they are trying to create a third one in the east of Syria, just at the border with Turkey and Iraq. And if they are able to create this third military base, it will be easy for the Russians to stop the project of Turkey, France, United Kingdom, Israel, and Saudi Arabia to create this new state in the north of Syria. And right now, we don't see any change in the military level inside Syria. But this is absolutely normal because the Russians are continuing their bombing to destroy the main equipment from Daesh, from the ISIL, and from other terrorist groups, of course. And at the same time, the Arab Syrian army and Hezbollah are preparing an uprising of the people who are under the rule of the terrorists. So we can already anticipate that in 1 or 2 months, you will have a deep change in Syria with the uprising of the population against the terrorists, and suddenly they will be ousted from the main part of Syria, except for the desert. Of course, they will already use the desert for them.
Hang on 1 second, Thierry. We've got to have a break, but I'll just get you back for a couple of minutes and see if we can clarify that big news we just talked about. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. And we're on the line with Thierry Masson from Damascus, Syria, the only Western correspondent continuously in the Syrian capital since all this started back in one particular. He's been there since October, November of 2011. Now, Thierry, that is big news. So there is an uprising, a rebellion, right? A rebellion prepared by Hezbollah,
yes,
and other forces against,
yes,
the oppression, the misrule, the terrible conditions that have been imposed by ISIS, Daesh, but also against some of these others, the Nusra, Al-Qaeda, perhaps. Is that right?
Yes, yes, right. And we don't know exactly how the Russians will proceed to help for this rebellion, but it's clear that the Russians are now testing new weapons all over Syria. You remember I explained in a previous broadcast that the Russian militaries create a new weapon to inhibit the communication and the commands of NATO. So in a circle 300 kilometers around Latakia,
right,
NATO is no more able to command its own weapons. They are no more able to use missiles, for example. But in the last weeks, Russia tests this weapon and something else in the Mediterranean side of Syria. So for 2 days, Lebanon was forced to close its airport in Beirut because it was no more possible for them to control the civilian planes. And it was the same in Cyprus, in the Mediterranean Sea.
Right.
And 2 days ago, they closed also, during 2 days, the airport of Erbil in Iraq, exactly for the same reason. Officially, the Russian said we are testing new missiles in this part of the ground, but in fact, it's clear that they are testing missiles and other weapons at the same time. And it's clear that if they test this, it's to show to the Lebanese, to the Cyprus, and to the Iraqi government that they are now controlling everything with new weapons, and that NATO can't interfere with the Russian army. So,
When you say Cyprus, does the Cyprus also include those British Royal Air Force bases on Cyprus?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. As you know, there is two Russian, British Air Forces bases in Cyprus, and both of them were blocked during 2 days. Yes. So at the same time, we can see that Saudi Arabia tried to organize a new political opposition. They invite some groups in Riyadh to create a political platform against the Syrian government. But in fact, this meeting was not conclusive because there is always big opposition in different groups, and they don't invite the Kurdish people from Syria. So it's clear that Saudi Arabia is not on is not part of the French, British, and Israeli plan to create this new Kurdistan in the north of Syria. So as the troops of the jihadists are divided in these two different blocks, certainly they will lose more quickly.
So you were saying you've called this, I think, the pseudo-Turkestan, right? And if I could ask, you say the people supporting this are Turkey, France, Israel, and some others you mentioned?
And the British, yes. You know, it's exactly the same situation that in 1956 with the Suez Canal. If you remember at that time, you had France, United Kingdom, and Israel attacking the Suez Canal and Egypt, and they were supported by Turkey. It's exactly the same. So I think that probably you will have the same reaction, both from Russia and from United States, and they will stop this colonial power.
Well, that would be very happy for the end of the year. Let's just see.
It must be at the beginning of next year, not at the end. They need 1 month or two to begin the operation. Yeah.
Jerry, a lot of people here are interested in your report about the Saudi AWACS aircraft used to shoot down the Russian Sukhoi some weeks ago?
Yes. For this operation against the Russian plane, it's now sure that the Turkish use an AWACS from Saudi Arabia, because of the Russian weapons, it was not possible for the Turkish Air Force to guide the missile on the Russian plane. So they need an AWACS for that, and it was one from Saudi Arabia. But at the same time, you have another AWACS in the sky, who's from NATO, comes from Greece. and it is unclear if the Turkish Air Force use only the Saudi AWACS or also the NATO AWACS. But all the documents we have, including the radars, shows that the operation was prepared long time before. And this is, of course, this corresponds with the alert that Fuad Avni, a famous whistleblower from Turkey, announced 1 month before this attack. He announced that the Turkish government will destroy a Russian plane to oust Russia from the north of Syria. But as you see, the result is absolutely contrary of that. And right now, Russia is extending its presence in the north of Syria.
All right. We're just about out of time. Is there anything to add?
No, nothing, except that it's very difficult right now to understand who is governing in the United States, because, yes, really, we have two different powers at the same time, and it's difficult to know who is deciding for the military.
We'll try to clarify it as best we can. But we got rid of Allen. It's time for Ashton Carter to be fired. See you soon, Jerry. Thank you. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis.
At the State Department as a counterterrorism analyst. I was at Special Operations Command. I was at U.S. Central Command. I got a direct commission as an Army officer. I had advanced degrees, a PhD, a master's, and a bachelor's, and I spoke Spanish fluently. So I lived all my life in California, and I went out to Washington, D.C. in 1998 to go to fight against the Clinton administration. I thought they were doing some things I found immoral and bad, so developing Homeland Security. So I got pulled into the Booz Allen Hamilton shop by a guy named Colonel Jeff Jones, who was a 4th Psychological Operations Command commander. He was an old school John Wayne, best and brightest of what we had in the military. I say had in the military because he's passed and there's no one that matches him. And I remember going to a Pentagon briefing in which I stood up and challenged Martin or Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and General Myers. And I said, "Sir, what are we doing in the psychological operations community? What are we doing in psychological warfare?" My background had been in advertising, and I did a lot of study into the Islamic mind, Islamic counterterrorism, jihad. I knew everything there was to know on the Sunnah, the Hadiths, the life of Muhammad, the Quran. And I was working in the Bush administration at the time. And I was working with joint interagencies and how they were attacking the menace of, quote, September 11th, which I came to discover much later was not the narrative that I thought it was. But I'll leave that aside for right now. But Myers and Rumsfeld had said, "Well, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're failing, and we need better and brighter people to join the team. So why don't you join? Why don't you join the military?" And shortly after that, I got a call from Colonel Jeff Jones and said, "I liked what you said. I'm looking to assemble a team of people. I want you to join it." So I left the Bush administration and joined Colonel Jones's team in Booz Allen Hamilton, and I embarked on my military career. I was given a direct commission. I went through Army training. And I saw things, and nothing I ever talk about is classified. I take my oath as an officer and as someone who's sworn to top secret SEI material very seriously, and I never discuss anything that was TSSEI or anything that could be classified. So I then embarked on a journey with Booz Allen Hamilton, and I worked at the State Department and did counterterrorism work, Special Operations Command. I worked joint interagencies, Pentagon. And I was soon after tapped to go into counterterrorism threat finance. Now, that was the job tracking money supplies, tracking terrorists and their banks and their couriers and their networks and everything that bad guys use to fund their operations against U.S. military personnel. and I was taken down to U.S. Central Command at MacDill Air Force Base, Florida. MacDill is a joint base. You've got special operations. You've got all sorts of operation SEALs and Green Berets and everything down there. And I went down and started doing a lot of work. And my boss was a guy named Dove Zackheim. How many of you have heard of Dove Zackheim? Dove Zackheim was the comptroller. You can Google a lot of this stuff in YouTube and what have you. Dove Zackheim was the comptroller at the Pentagon where $2.3 trillion went missing. He's all wrapped up in a lot of the YouTube presentations on the 9/11 shenanigans and all the cover-up and who was really responsible. He's Rabbi Dove Zackheim, by the way. He's got dual citizenship in Israel. And his son is a guy named Roger Zackheim. And Roger Zackheim worked with him and worked at the Pentagon, too. He also later went to the House Armed Services Committee. And then he's went to a law firm called Covington & Burling. Covington & Burling will be brought in soon. And I'm starting to mention a lot of these parties, and a lot of it, you know, I'll flip on the web. Actually, I think I can do it here. There we go. This is sort of the matrix of the whole operation. Dove Zackheim hired me, took me down to U.S. Central Command, and I started doing tracking money supplies. I started discovering a lot of contractor fraud, a lot of funny business that was going on with Booz Allen Hamilton and our military. Of course, I was wearing a dual hat. I was a contractor and a military officer, so I had military guys calling me from Iraq looking for support, and I was trying to provide it. I was trying to provide the best services, intel, and everything that we could to keep guys alive, because I thought we were in war. I wasn't looking at it like a contract. I wasn't looking at it like a job. I was looking at it like, you know what? I went and joined the military and joined Booz Allen to serve my country and finish a war that I was told other guys started. But that came to be changed a lot later when I discovered other guys didn't start it. We kind of started it ourselves. But in making a lot of reports and a lot of briefings, I was soon after told to shut up and be quiet and not make noise, and we weren't going to be doing anything new, despite how valuable it was going to be to our guys. And I'll make a long story short. I remember stopping at the gate at MacDill Air Force Base, and I was stopped by military police, and they ordered me out of my car and at gunpoint. Now I thought this was an operation. I was destined to be deployed. I was going to go overseas. I had a top secret clearance. I was told you're going to be tested. You're going to be stopped. You're going to go through operations to determine, you know, your muster, because you're going to go over to bad guys' land and you may get kidnapped and all that stuff. So I honestly thought I was being part of an operational training module. And he said to me, I'm politically connected. I'll make a lot of this go away. It's a big misunderstanding. And I'm thinking it's part of an operation anyway, so I go with the flow. And I go back to my military base, or my military battalion. And here's when they start. Obama had been elected. This is 2010, of summer of 2010. And they were going about trying to introduce Don't Ask, Don't Tell's reversal in the military, where they introduced homosexuality in the military. And I had worked at psychological operations, and I knew everything about the Islamic culture, mind, and the jihadis. And I wrote a report and sent it up to the White House, the Pentagon, John Boehner, and my command at U.S. Civil Affairs Psychological Operations Command. And I said, if we change this policy, we're basically going to be inflaming the radical Muslim world to recruit new suicide bombers, and our troops are going to be hurt, and it's not a wise policy to change at this point. Well, one month after I submitted that report, I was indicted by the Department of Justice. And that indictment said I had made a false statement on a housing form by circling three buttons, and my orders hadn't yet been cut. So they said, because your orders hadn't been cut, technically these circles that you filled out were false, so that's a false statement. And they also said you had guns on base that hadn't yet been registered, so you violated this. And you wore your uniform without authorization. And I thought, how can a civil justice department tell me, an army officer, that I've worn my uniform? You're not in charge of the military. The military's in charge of the military. Article 1, Section 8, the military shall do all administrative issues. The military never charged me with anything. The military never even cited me with anything. This was all Obama's holder justice department. And in hearing some of Chris Ann's presentations on the usurpation of power, I was the first to fall in this whole Boston Tea Party shot. I was the black guy that she mentioned who came out And they took me out. They took me down. They charged me with these three things. And again, I'm thinking, is this a setup? This has got to be crazy because there's no way they can get away with this. I've never been in trouble. I mean, I'm an Army officer with a top secret clearance and worked at the highest levels of counterterrorism. Nah, they got to be doing this for ulterior motives. And I go down to Florida and expecting all this to be thrown out, motion to suppress. And the law, I'll tell you one thing about lawyers, present company excluded. They are some of the uncreative dullards you'll ever encounter in life. They don't know how to think. They're not creative. They're systematic people. They think in blocks, as Charlie Brown's blockhead appropriately applies to them. And, you know, the lawyers, I'm not, you know, again, the biggest thing about my story and my experience is God was present. In everything that happened to me, God was present. And he was taking me through a process and a place and pounding character into me like an anvil against steel, and was really burning out a lot of the dross. And I was going through an incredible transformation. And I go down to Florida, and I expected all this to be thrown out. None of my documents that I had given my lawyer, David Shalala, he put into the court record. And these are documents establishing who I was with the military, the work I was doing, the top secret clearance, and everything like that. Instead, he kept all of that out. He didn't put me on the stand as I requested. He didn't meet with me until the day of trial. He was supposed to meet me a week prior. I show up to the courtroom and he's, oh yeah, I was busy. Well, this is my life. And I go into court for the next 4 days. I hear this Obama Justice Department federal prosecutor in a federal court, not state. So they violated the laws of Florida. They violated the laws of the civilian population because they took an issue that occurred on Florida land and made it a federal issue. And I wasn't on federal land. So there's a lot of intricacies and legalities involved with this case that lawyers are starting to contact me about and say, well, did they do this? Did they do that? How come you didn't do this? Hey, welcome to my world. I should have done, if I knew then what I knew now, I would have been a gunslinger in the courtroom with words and no one would have walked out of there except me. But I had to go through that whole process in order to learn the skills and learn the knowledge. And what Chris Anna was talking about is beautiful. It's perfect because that material can empower you and how to react and what to know. So I go down to court and I go through this whole monkey trial, and the next thing I know, this is the other funny thing, the prosecutor tried to introduce evidence saying I had dressed up in a police uniform at Fort Myer up in Washington, D.C., which was complete baloney and a lie, but they got it from a Wackenhut security guard. Wackenhut is a CIA operation. So the CIA were coming after me, and I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. I'm pretty high on the hog of someone's pissed off list. And they throw that out at the judge at the beginning of trial to make me look like a crazy guy. And then at the end of the trial, the judge says, well, wait a minute, you had something about him dressing up as a police uniform. And I had an attorney in Washington, D.C. who got a private investigator who did the investigation. They said, no, it wasn't me, and they're making this up. Get the cameras, get everything, you'll find that out. They retracted it at the last minute. The prosecutor, her name was Sarah Sweeney, and her chief, you know, master was a guy named O'Neill. O'Neill prosecuted a guy named Brad Birkenfeld and Swiss bankers and all the shenanigans with UBS and these other banks that I'll come to later. But she retracted that and said, oh, we're having trouble with our witness. But she had already thrown the big pot of spaghetti against the wall. And the judge said, all right, well, and the civilian jury didn't know anything about military procedure, and they just thought, again, the trauma of the Patriot Act and all the stuff that has happened, they thought, this guy's done something. We don't know what, and we're just going to vote him, you know, guilty. So a civilian trial voted me guilty of making a false statement on a housing form, wearing my uniform and having guns unregistered. Now, I thought I was going to have an appeal. I thought I was going to have military lawyers step in. I was going to fire these attorneys and get some new ones. Well, that was all fine in fantasy world, but the reality is they put a big cane around my neck and yanked me into prison. And they put me into a prison for 6 months, and it was quite a hellacious experience. But again, I looked at it like an Army guy. This is Army training. I'm going to be like in a bamboo cage. I'm going to muster down. Plus, God's leading me for a reason. You know, in the Pharaoh's prison or Jonah and the whale, there's all sorts of analogies. But, you know, we as Christians, we're called to suffer. We're called to fight. We're called not to live a luxury life full of cotton candy and watching The Simpsons and taking alcohol and all that stuff. We're called to be the light and the salt for the other people to see and glow. So I found the prison, you know, to be a ministry, and I was devastated because what it did to my family, because they were traumatized, they thought I was getting raped in the prison and all this stuff. I kept saying, no, nothing's happening, this is all going to work its way out. You know, and the parents and all that, well, I don't know what's going on. And it was traumatic because the media wrote all these lies and nonsense. He's an imposter, he's trying to bring guns on a base, he's going to possibly shoot it up, and all this stuff. Well, they pulled me in front of sentencing, and the judge says, make a long story short, instead of 0 to 7 months, which was my guidelines for this thing, they gave me 36 months, an enhancement. And they gave me an enhancement because my guns had brought on a base, and they illegally perverted the law by saying, because he got on a base and he had guns, we're going to give him a gun enhancement, like I had robbed a bank using a gun or done anything using a gun. So they gave me a gun enhancement. Now, the significance of this story is what they've done to me, they can do to you. They can do to your kids. This isn't about me. This isn't about anything that I went through. This is about you. This is about you all using, and the reason I wanted to give you out cars, and I want you to keep these, and if you need more, call me, contact me, I'll give you some. I want you to use this story, this card, as your concrete application, your tool, your experience. This can be your entryway to engage politicians and military.
And there I'll say, this is about the politicians. Yes, they're talking about ad nauseum. Even Jeb saying, well, Trump and Hillary are hooking up to throw the race back to the original slave-mongering Dixiecrats. The Clintons just mentioned there. Donna Shalala, I didn't get on this segment recorded, but David was his lawyer, public pretender, or whatever, or I imagine not public pretender, but David Shalala is, I suppose, related to Donna Shalala, who was in the Clinton administration.
Military people and political people, and say, hey, Senator Feinstein, we're all from California here, and I'm from California, so I'm just going to focus on California.
Oh, well, since you mentioned Frankenstein, Senator grafted onto the political body of the best mayor San Francisco ever had, and the first gay supervisor, Harvey Milk, immediately announces the opposite of the conspiracy, saying the suspect is, like the Academy Awards, hand me the envelope and I'll read it. Never mind, she's supposedly the head of intelligence in the Senate, so how can you not know they're responsible? Immediately announcing the absence of conspiracy as the bodies hit the ground. JFK, MLK, RFK style.
You can go up to Senator Feinstein. You can go up to any member of Congress and say, hey, you see this? Yeah. And I was a PSYOP guy, so I know the thing about imagery and symbolism and talisman and all that other stuff. You can show them this and say, this is a story that a soldier, his rights and my rights were violated. His rights as a soldier, his rights as a civilian.
Now, he's beginning to defend the rights of soldiers to live in Iraq as part of a war-mongering nation invasion, which I didn't test, but
my kid serves, or my husband serves, or I served, or whatever. You need to investigate this, and I'm holding you to task. This is a concrete thing. This isn't theory. As beautiful as theory is, we need to learn the law and we need to learn application. This is a concrete thing that happened, and it's still happening because it's still in the courts. I'm going back to Florida in the next 30 to 60 days, like Goliath, Goliath going back into, not Goliath, I'm sorry. Who's a strong man? Samson, thank you very much. Samson going back into the pillars, and I'm going to push him down, and hopefully I'll survive the event, but I'm going back into a court of Florida law to say all of this was a violation of my constitutional rights, and you violate every American's rights by doing to me what you did. A gross perversion of justice, a perversion of the law. You violated the Uniform Code of Military Justice by attacking me. Only the military can, and on and on and on. But that's a long story of where it is legally. But this can be a weapon for all of you to use. And that's what we're here for, is to gain the experience and the knowledge to be powerful. So you can go, and I just did this with Catherine Baker in California. I stood up and said, hey, I'm a military officer. I wrote a report exposing terrorist financing going to bad guys, and I sent it to 150 to 200 members of Congress and the Senate. and the military. No one did anything. I'm giving it to you, and I expect you within a week to report back what you're doing on it. Well, I'll have to look at the jurisdiction. Yeah, you look. You keep looking. But I'm going to be here, and you're going to give me an answer. All of you can do the same thing. So live through this experience and use it to your advantage to protect yourself, protect your kids. So that's what this can do. And anybody who looks at it will go, is this real? Was this fiction? Was this made up? This is real. This is how God works. He uses the foolish things to confound the wise. He has put me in a position that no one in the country has been put. I was a military officer. I was a contractor. I was in the Bush administration. I was the highest levels of command. But of course, I was a Christian. So God had his hand on me. He was putting me there for a reason. So I get prosecuted. I get given my sentence. And they're going to whip me out to California. And of course, I'm appealing. I fired my attorneys. I start writing the military, doing everything I can to have this thing reviewed. I thought I was going to get out to form an appeal. And they put me on a bus and they shipped me out to Oklahoma to go to California. Well, that's where God's first hand, or second time, he puts his hand in and redirects me. He redirects me to Pennsylvania instead of California. And I go up to Pennsylvania. And that's where the story takes a turn to the miraculous. I meet a Swiss banker named Brad Birkenfeld. Brad Birkenfeld was a Swiss banker who came over from Switzerland to in 2007, 2008, and had 22,000 bank accounts at Union Bank of Switzerland, HSBC, Liechtenstein, Credit Suisse. He was the banker of bankers. He was a smart guy. He was seasoned. He was a civilian, and I don't think he was Christian, but he had been in key positions. He fled and came over to the United States after the CIA had targeted him and put him into a DUI situation to try and get economic espionage information. He packed his bags and came over to the U.S. Edward Snowden was part of that operation. Edward Snowden was a CIA asset at the time, and he had reported that to Glenn Greenwald. If you Google the Glenn Greenwald story, you will see Snowden's revelation of him being in the CIA and them targeting a Swiss banker. That was Brad Birkenfeld. You'll never hear this in the mainstream media. You'll never hear this by the politicians, but that's where you got them by the short hairs, because all this stuff begins to assemble into one nexus, and I'm at the center of the web, and I'm not going away, and I'm telling you the story, and it's all verifiable in documents. So Brad Birkenfeld had come over. He had given his 22,000 bank accounts, had asked for subpoenas. The Justice Department kicked him out, didn't want anything to do with him. He goes to the IRS, the SEC. They don't want him. He finally gets a Senate hearing with Senator Carl Levin and McCain and then Senator Barack Obama. And he gives all this material. Next thing you know, they prosecute him with what he said. And another interesting thing happened. When he came over, he had a banker friend of his named Mohammed something who lived in London. He was very wealthy. And he called Brad and said, hey, I'm going to Mexico. I'm going to pick you up in my private plane. Oh, great, I'm in the U.S., picks up Brad, goes to Mexico. A letter shows up at UBS headquarters, supposedly written by this friend of Brad's. The guy never wrote it. So CIA or NSA, in working in conjunction with the Department of Justice, fabricated a false letter, pretending to be written by his friend, in the hopes of getting him killed or arrested or something. And that came out when UBS got this letter, and it wasn't signed by his friend. It was just dated July 2007 or something. And they said, why did you send us a letter? And the guy said, I never sent you a letter. Send it to me. He sent it to him. He sent it to Brad. Brad went to the Department of Justice. Said, what the hell is this? Oh, we'll get back to you. They never did. Next thing you know, they prosecute him, throw him in jail for 40 months. That's where he met me. Was it at Pennsylvania. And over six, I couldn't believe it. I knew I was there for a reason. I know he was doing something. And I was on mission. I was fighting in the Army and the defense contracting, trying to find bad guys and their money supplies, trying to find out where the Swiss bank accounts were. Swiss bank accounts are invisible. You'll never find them. And here I go to prison in Pennsylvania, and I run into Brad Birkenfeld, the Swiss banker with 22,000 bank accounts. And I think, God is great. He is powerful. If anything, this could go to anybody who's an unbeliever and say, this was not an accident. It wasn't a planned operation. He was in charge of this. And this is just snowballing now. Brad and I sat down for 6 months, went over every document he had. It even had WikiLeaks cables sent into him. One thing about the federal prison system, we were at a camp, right? A camp, country club. It was just like a college campus, really. And you had, you know, stockbrokers, doctors, lawyers, people that were there, for a lot of them were set up. I mean, if you knew half the truth about how easy it is to be thrown in a prison, especially when you have family and stuff, and the Justice Department says, hey, you better plea or else we're going to put you in for 20 years. If you've got a family and kids, all right, I'm going to take a plea and be out in a year and a day. Most guys do that. The sad thing for you is that establishes the precedent, and the island shrinks a little bit more. And now the Justice Department can come to you and do the same thing. But Brad and I went over 6 months and saw all of his documents and compared everything. I said, Brad, are you telling me not one time did anybody in a uniform come and get this from you? And he said, not once, not ever did anybody in the military or the intelligence community debrief me. I said, well, that's my job. I was on the trail of bad guys and their money. You're the goose that laid the golden egg. So let's start writing all this up and send it to the military channels. Because I was still a military officer in prison. I had not been discharged. I was still a military officer. And some people like Susan Lindauer and Barbara Honegger and people that I've met in the 9/11 issue much later when I came out have said, Scott, you were set up. You were sent in there to find this information. I said, well, God may have done it, and maybe he used men to articulate it. But they're convinced that I was sent in to get Brad Birkenfeld and get his material. Because shortly after that, we assembled a report. We sent it up to General James Mattis at U.S. Central Command. And Brad said, sir, I am Brad Birkenfeld. I'm the Swiss banker. I've got 22,000 bank accounts, none of which were shared with you. They all articulate terrorist financing sources. And I know this for a fact because Booz Allen Hamilton is contracted to do that. And I know Scott Bennett was a contractor, and he never got this information. Please debrief me. We sent that up to U.S. Central Command. 30 or 60 days later, after James Mattis started asking questions, he was fired by Obama. And then all the rats started jumping ship from the Obama administration. It was a long sink. But Brad then got out of prison. And 1 month later, on September 11th, 2012, he was paid off $104 million. And he went completely silent, probably because they threatened him with lead, not just gold. And on that same day, what else happened?
You got out.
No. Benghazi occurred. And everyone in the intelligence community has said Benghazi was done simultaneously with this $104 million payoff. And you can go to the website and you can see the actual briefing that Brad's lawyers gave on September 11, 2012. And you can match it with the Benghazi attacks. Now, the other significant thing is on the Benghazi, that same day, you had a lot of money exchanges between the Benghazi, which now has come out with Larry Klayman, or Judicial Watch and FOIA. You see a lot of the legal documents that came out on that day, which articulate that Benghazi was not an Egyptian filmmaker issue. It was bad guys. Bad guys that we were employing that were coming in from various sources to usurp and destabilize and kick out of power Muammar Gaddafi. And they were being funded Swiss banks and European banks and other banks, but we were funding bad guys, and that came out in the FOIA that Judicial Watch came, and it came from the Defense Intelligence Agency. So the Defense Intelligence Agency wrote a report that said bad guys did this, not an Egyptian filmmaker, and bad guys that are supported by Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, which are basically make up the Wahhabist, Salafist powers. So we knew back in those days, September 11th, 2012, that this